Radiotopia from PRX.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
February 14th, 1998.
Sixth grade.
Dear diary.
Dear Jesus.
Dear sweet asswad.
Adults sharing the embarrassing things
they created as kids.
So I wrote poems about masturbation.
Before an audience
of total strangers.
I feel like an idiot.
I'm the only normal one in my entire family.
Mom, you can't read this.
These are the stories hidden inside
the pages of our past.
Welcome to the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil, and today's episode peeks inside the teenage writings of Heath Corson, who told us his childhood obsessions included reading X-Men, wearing sweater vests, and sitting at the computer to play Leisure Suit Larry. Now, back in high school, there's nothing worse than feeling like you've been branded with a label, especially if you're convinced that label means no one will date you. This was the case with Heath, who decided the best way to change his less-than-desirable image was to write a play inspired by one of his favorite films of the 1980s. Here's Heath reading aloud his one-act play with the help of two special guests who once appeared opposite each other on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, only to be reunited in the name of T-Next, on stage at Mortified at the Bell House in Brooklyn, 2014.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Good evening, Brooklyn. My name's Heath Corson. I grew up in Chicago, and I went to a very... Thank you. I went to a very small school that was actually kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. So by the time I reached the end of my sophomore year, most of my friends were dating. And I, on the other hand, was the funny fat kid. I know, it's shocking. So I quickly got stereotyped as the class clown, like, way back in second grade. And when your school is, like, K through 12, like, that's it. You're done. Like, that's who you are for your entire career. So, in my heart, though, I was longing to be taken seriously, mostly by a girl. Any girl. So the year is 1987, and I'm in middle school. And I had just seen Less Than Zero. And for those of you who don't remember Less Than Zero, this is stars Robert Downey Jr. before he was Tony Stark. Way before. So he plays a character called Julian, and he is so freaking cool and above it all and just does drugs and he's awesome. I totally related to him, right? Because at the time we were both like incredibly misunderstood. So around this time, I also had a conversation and really felt like I connected with this freshman girl. Her name was Lauren, and I mean, she really got me. And this was the first time someone took me seriously and didn't just see me as the funny guy. So naturally, I had this huge crush on her. So I wrote this play. Now these days, we would call it fan fiction, but I didn't know it at the time, but I was basically writing Less Than Zero fan fiction, which... I don't think anyone has ever said those words. So I wrote it longhand, late one Thursday night, just angry and trying to sort out my emotions and trying to be taken seriously. And I tossed it in a bottom drawer of a desk and I finished out my high school career as the lovable loser class clown. And I have never, ever shown this play to anyone until today. Thank you. Doesn't make it any easier. So, if you'll indulge me, I'm very pleased and extremely mortified to present my opus, which is going to be read tonight by the mortified community players, Adam Bush and Amber Benson. I'll let them get set up, and I will be narrating so that you don't miss any of my awesome stage direction, which is extensive, spoiler. Situation. Jeff Rogers is a high school junior. It's the first, crossed out, second week of summer, and boredom has set in. Jeff is beginning to become suicidal. To relieve this, he drinks. Kathy Davenport is a young girl who just finished her freshman year. She's interested in Jeff, or rather, the facade Jeff puts up. The scene opens with Jeff, drunk, showing up at Kathy's door at 2:15 a.m. with her parents out of town. I don't know how you're supposed to know that, but... The setting is an upper-class sitting room, which the front door opens into. We hear the doorbell ring three times before we hear the intercom click on.
Yes? Who is it?
It's Jeff. Jeff Rogers. From school.
Jeff, what are you... Do you know what time it is?
Why don't you have a watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, why are you here?
Pause.
Can I talk to you?
Jeff, it's late. My parents aren't home.
Please?
Pause.
Is something wrong?
Pause.
I need to talk, please.
Kathy enters in shorts, barefoot, and an oversized t-shirt. Her hair is back in a ponytail, but we can see how attractive she is. Kathy looks through the hole in the door and slowly undoes the lock. Jeff stands in the faint lighting outside. His hair's a mess. He wears a button-down shirt with a half untucked and unbuttoned. His pants are wrinkled. He wears a nice sweater around his waist, and he carries a small brown paper bag with a bottle of vodka in it. He has clearly been drinking heavily for a while and is on the edge of a major emotional explosion. He is trying to hide it.
Hi.
Pause.
It's a nice house. I like the decor. It's a nice couch. How's your summer been?
Fine. Just fine.
She sits next to him.
What have you been up to?
Oh, this and that. Nothing much. Is something wrong?
Wrong? Wrong? That's not the question. The question is anything right? Yeah. That's the question, babe. Is anything right, or are we just doomed to be hurled into this eternal chaos forever? Are we born before we die, or are we just going through the motions of life?
He finds this funny and laughs hysterically.
Have you been alone this whole night?
Just me, Mr. Bottle, myself, and I.
Why? Why don't you go out with Kevin or Nick?
Kevin and Nick are assholes.
I thought they were your best friends.
I just said they were assholes.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say. What did they do? Ditch you or something?
Nothing that easy. Where are your parents?
Huh? Oh, they're in New York for the weekend. Oh, God. They will die if they find out that I let you in here. You gotta leave.
No, just let me stay, please. Just a little bit longer. My head hurts.
How much did you drink?
Not a lot. Maybe a fifth of the bottle, maybe a quarter.
Jesus.
Nope. He won't help me.
Yeah.
Why would you drink all this by yourself?
I was depressed.
You? You don't get depressed. I thought you were always happy, always making other people laugh. You're so funny. How can you be depressed?
Fuck you.
What?
Fuck you. Fuck you for thinking that I have it so easy. That I'm such a funny guy, I make everybody laugh. I'm eternally happy. I sit and I entertain so many people, so many goddamn people. And what does it get me? Who makes me laugh when I'm sad? You know, you laugh and the whole world laughs with you. You cry and everyone laughs at you. Who makes me laugh when I'm depressed? No one. I just sit and everybody wants to know why the comedian is on break, why the jester isn't laughing. Who watches The Watchmen? I read that in a comic book. Who watches The Watchmen? Who's there for me? Not Kevin and Nick. Those guys are just window dressing their shells. They live for parties and drinking and girls. To them, a challenge is to see how many girls they can get drunk and in bed by the end of the evening. Yeah, I used to do it too. It was a kick. You remember what happened to Robin Gates? What Kevin did to her? She had to have an abortion. Her parents, they had to move because of all the crap they were getting from kids. Last Friday at Steve's, Kevin was bragging about it. He was making jokes. I could have killed him right there on the spot. And everybody just looks to me to make the funny joke. Where's Jeff with the funny joke? I just stared. I couldn't say anything. I just stared.
What happened? To you, I mean.
I just left the party. I couldn't handle being around those mannequins anymore.
Okay, I'm going to interject just for a second here. I just want to say that for the record, I turned out okay. I actually grew up to become a writer, a better writer than this. But also looking back and sort of remembering this experience, it became very clear that that funny fat kid classification stuck because of me, because I played into it, because it was a role that I was comfortable doing, and I actually put myself in those situations because I was afraid of what would happen if somebody really knew who I really was. It wasn't until I went away to college and I figured out that I could be a whole person and not just the class clown, and girls seemed to follow, and so did better writing. So.
What are you looking at?
I'm just looking. Looking at you.
He gets closer.
Why?
She moves closer.
Why not?
She closes her eyes for the kiss. He falters for a second, then goes with it. They get more passionate, and he breaks off suddenly.
I didn't want that. I just want you to know I didn't want that.
God damn it. Jeff puts his head in his hands. Kathy curls up in the fetal position. They sit.
Is it me?
What?
You said you didn't want it. Is it me?
Is what you?
Why did you stop? If you didn't want it so much, why did you even come here?
I just wanted to talk to you, to someone, anyone. I remembered when we talked after school that one day. We talked. I talked. You listened. You talked. I listened. Listened to each other. You didn't expect anything from me. I didn't have to be witty or clever or funny. I just was. We just talked, you know? Could have been about anything.
English.
Yeah. Yeah, English.
And scene.
That was Heath Corson reading aloud his childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness, on stage at Mortified in Brooklyn at the Bell House. Stick around, there's more to the story, as we chat with today's reader in our postmortem, Fide. We caught up with Heath and discussed the reaction he hoped his crush would have when he presented her with his opus.
It was gonna be like this awesome, like, oh my gosh, I see the real you now. And I'm so attracted and overwhelmed by it that I'm just swooning for everything that you are.
So what was her reaction?
I never showed it to her. I never showed it to anybody before we performed it. Even though I was proud of it, it seemed super angry. And I was like, oh yeah, this is not gonna do what I think it's gonna do.
Heath had never been in a relationship when he wrote that play. But now that he's a married man, we wondered how his fictional fight between two lovers stacked up.
I don't know that I got a single aspect of it right. Well, for starters, I thought everyone got their own monologue. Clearly, you get a monologue and then I get a monologue to respond. I would say that in relationships, people don't usually fight that way. In my experience, when emotions are high, people don't usually let you finish a sentence.
So, okay, writing accurate depictions of reality wasn't exactly Heath's forte. Luckily, he was a kid full of wild ideas.
I would do space operas. I would do science fiction. I'd write like dirty limericks, Alice in Wonderland fan fiction. I think I wrote something about Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman all having lunch together. Superman had a super sub and Wonder Woman had onion rings and Batman was very dark. He only ate like dessert.
This obsession with genre paved the way for his life today as a professional writer of fantasy and sci-fi. It even came full circle recently when he got hired to write a comic book of one of his all-time favorite characters, Bizarro.
If I went back and told this version of me that he was at some point going to get to write a comic for DC Comics, that version would not believe it. First of all, he'd be like, who's this bald guy? What are you doing in my room? But then he'd say, you're lying. Shut up.
We're sad to report that, despite his achievements, Heath never solved the greatest mystery of his play.
Never found out who watches The Watchmen.
And he's pretty sure that Bret Easton Ellis would have some strong opinions about his homage to Less Than Zero.
I do not think that he would be excited that he drove bad, introspective, hormone-fueled writing out of teenagers. I think he'd be horrified.
To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of the series. The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. Of course, if your organization is interested in supporting this podcast, please email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Gina Delvac, Pierce Priscelli, Kathy Tu, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Katcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. A Additional thanks to Jared Bogley, Kate Frolick, Marina Schifrin, Graham Fuchs, The Bell House in Brooklyn, Stephen Chupaska, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survive.